Disc 7.
Chapter 73. David Becker felt as if his face had been doused in turpentine and ignited. He rolled over the floor and squinted through bleary tunnel vision at the girl halfway to the revolving doors. She was running in short, terrified bursts, dragging her duffel behind her across the tile. Becker tried to pull himself to his feet, but he could not. He was blinded by red-hot fire. She can't get away. He tried to call out, but there was no air in his lungs, only a sickening pain.
No,
he coughed. The sound barely left his lips. Becker knew the second she went through the door, she would disappear forever. He tried to call out again, but his throat was searing. The girl had almost reached the revolving door. Becker staggered to his feet, gasping for breath. He stumbled after her. The girl dashed into the first compartment of the revolving door, dragging her duffel behind her. 20 yards back, Becker was staggering blindly toward the door.
Wait!
He gasped.
Wait!
The girl pushed furiously on the inside of the door. The door began to rotate, but then it jammed. The blonde wheeled in terror and saw her duffel snagged in the opening. She knelt and pulled furiously to free it. Becker fixed his bleary vision on the fabric protruding through the door. As he dove, the red corner of nylon protruding from the crack was all he could see. He flew toward it, arms outstretched. As David Becker fell toward the door, his hands only inches away, the fabric slipped into the crack and disappeared. His fingers clutched empty air as the door lurched into motion. The girl and the duffel tumbled into the street outside.
Megan!
Becker wailed as he hit the floor. White-hot needles shot through the back of his eye sockets. His vision tunneled to nothing, and a new wave of nausea rolled in. His own voice echoed in the blackness.
Megan!
David Becker wasn't sure how long he'd been lying there before he became aware of the hum of fluorescent bulbs overhead. Everything else was still. Through the silence came a voice. Someone was calling. He tried to lift his head off the floor. The world was cockeyed, watery. Again the voice. He squinted down the concourse and saw a figure 20 yards away.
Mister?
Becker recognized the voice. It was the girl. She was standing at another entrance farther down the concourse, clutching her duffel to her chest. She looked more frightened now than she had before.
Mister? She asked, her voice trembling. I never told you my name. How come you know my name?
Chapter 74. Director Leland Fontaine was a mountain of a man, 63 years old, with a close-cropped military haircut and a rigid demeanor. His jet-black eyes were like coal when he was irritated, which was almost always. He'd risen through the ranks of the NSA through hard work, good planning, and the well-earned respect of his predecessors. He was the first African-American director of the National Security Agency, but nobody ever mentioned the distinction. Fontaine's politics were decidedly colorblind, and his staff wisely followed suit. Fontaine had kept Midge and Brinkerhoff standing as he went through the silent ritual of making himself a mug of Guatemalan Java. Then he'd settled at his desk, left them standing, and questioned them like schoolchildren in the principal's office. Midge did the talking, explaining the unusual series of events that led them to violate the sanctity of Fontaine's office.
A virus? The director asked coldly. You two think we've got a virus?
Brinkerhoff winced.
Yes, sir, Midge snapped.
Because Strathmore bypassed Gauntlet?
Fontaine eyed the printout in front of him.
Yes, she said. And there's a file that hasn't broken in over 20 hours.
Fontaine frowned.
Or so your data says.
Midge was about to protest, but she held her tongue. Instead, she went for the throat.
There's a blackout in crypto.
Fontaine looked up, apparently surprised. Midge confirmed with a curt nod.
All power's down. Jabba thought maybe...
You called Jabba?
Yes, sir, I...
Jabba?
Fontaine stood up, furious.
Why the hell didn't you call Strathmore?
We did, Midge defended. He said everything was fine.
Fontaine stood, his chest heaving.
Then we have no reason to doubt him.
There was closure in his voice. He took a sip of coffee.
Now, if you'll excuse me, I have work to do.
Midge's jaw dropped.
I beg your pardon?
Brinkerhoff was already headed for the door, but Midge was cemented in place.
I said good night, Miss Milken, Fontaine repeated.
You are excused.
But, sir, she stammered, I have to protest. I think...
You protest?
The director demanded. He set down his coffee.
I protest. I protest to your presence in my office. I protest to your insinuations that the deputy director of this agency is lying. I protest...
We have a virus, sir. My instincts tell me...
Well, your instincts are wrong, Miss Milken. For once, they're wrong.
Midge stood fast.
But, sir, Commander Strathmore bypassed Gauntlet.
Fontaine strode toward her, barely controlling his anger.
That is his prerogative. I pay you to watch analysts and service employees, not spy on the deputy director. If it weren't for him, we'd still be breaking codes with pencil and paper. Now leave me.
He turned to Brinkerhoff, who stood in the doorway, colorless and trembling.
Both of you.
With all due respect, sir, Midge said, I'd like to recommend we send a SysSec team to Crypto just to ensure
we will do no such thing.
After a tense beat, Midge nodded.
Very well. Good night.
She turned and left. As she passed, Brinkerhoff could see in her eyes that she had no intention of letting this rest. Not until her intuition was satisfied. Brinkerhoff gazed across the room at his boss, massive and seething behind his desk. This was not the director he knew. The director he knew was a stickler for detail, for neatly tied packages. He always encouraged his staff to examine and clarify any inconsistencies in daily procedure, no matter how minute. And yet here he was, asking them to turn their backs on a very bizarre series of coincidences. The director was obviously hiding something, but Brinkerhoff was paid to assist, not to question. Fontaine had proven over and over that he had everyone's best interests at heart. If assisting him now meant turning a blind eye, then so be it. Unfortunately, Midge was paid to question, and Brinkerhoff feared she was headed for Crypto to do just that.
Time to get out the resumes, Brinkerhoff thought as he turned to the door.
Chad!
Fontaine barked from behind him. Fontaine had seen the look in Midge's eyes when she left.
Don't let her out of this suite.
Brinkerhoff nodded and hustled after Midge. Fontaine sighed and put his head in his hands. His sable eyes were heavy. It had been a long, unexpected trip home. The past month had been one of great anticipation for Leland Fontaine. There were things happening right now at the NSA that would change history, and ironically, Director Fontaine had found out about them only by chance. 3 months ago, Fontaine had gotten news that Commander Strathmore's wife was leaving him. He'd also heard reports that Strathmore was working absurd hours and seemed about to crack under the pressure. Despite differences of opinion with Strathmore on many issues, Fontaine had always held his deputy director in the highest esteem. Strathmore was a brilliant man, maybe the best the NSA had. At the same time, ever since the Skipjack fiasco, Strathmore had been under tremendous stress. It made Fontaine uneasy. The commander held a lot of keys around the NSA, and Fontaine had an agency to protect. Fontaine needed someone to keep tabs on the wavering Strathmore and make sure he was 100%, but it was not that simple. Strathmore was a proud and powerful man. Fontaine needed a way to check up on the commander without undermining his confidence or authority. Fontaine decided, out of respect for Strathmore, to do the job himself. He had an invisible tap installed on Commander Strathmore's crypto account. His email, his interoffice correspondence, his brainstorms, all of it. If Strathmore was going to crack, the director would see warning signs in his work. But instead of signs of a breakdown, Fontaine uncovered the groundwork for one of the most incredible intelligence schemes he'd ever encountered. It was no wonder Strathmore was busting his ass. If he could pull this plan off, it would make up for the Skipjack fiasco 100 times over. Fontaine had concluded Strathmore was fine, working at 110%, as sly, smart, and patriotic as ever. The best thing the director could do would be to stand clear and watch the commander work his magic. Strathmore had devised a plan Fontaine had no intention of interrupting. Chapter 75. Strathmore fingered the Beretta in his lap. Even with the rage boiling in his blood, he was programmed to think clearly. The fact that Greg Hale had dared lay a finger on Susan Fletcher sickened him, but the fact that it was his own fault made him even sicker. Susan going into Node 3 had been his idea. Strathmore knew enough to compartmentalize his emotion. It could in no way affect his handling of Digital Fortress. He was the deputy director of the National Security Agency, and today his job was more critical than it had ever been. Strathmore slowed his breathing. Susan, his voice was efficient and unclouded. Did you delete Hale's email?
No,
she said, confused.
Do you have the passkey?
She shook her head. Strathmore frowned, chewing his lip. His mind was racing. He had a dilemma. He could easily enter his elevator password, and Susan would be gone. But he needed her there. He needed her help to find Hale's passkey. Strathmore hadn't told her yet, but finding that passkey was far more than a matter of academic interest. It was an absolute necessity. Strathmore suspected he could run Susan's nonconformity search and find the passkey himself, but he'd already encountered problems running her tracer. He was not about to risk it again. Susan, he sighed resolutely. I'd like you to help me find Hale's passkey.
What?
Susan stood up, her eyes wild. Strathmore fought off the urge to stand along with her. He knew a lot about negotiating. The position of power was always seated. He hoped she would follow suit. She did not.
Susan, sit down.
She ignored him.
Sit down.
It was an order. Susan remained standing.
Commander, if you've still got some burning desire to check out Tancato's algorithm, you can do it alone. I want out.
Strathmore hung his head and took a deep breath. It was clear she would need an explanation. She deserves one, he thought. Strathmore made his decision. Susan Fletcher would hear it all. He prayed he wasn't making a mistake.
Susan, he began, it wasn't supposed to come to this.
He ran his hand across his scalp.
There are some things I haven't told you. Sometimes a man in my position...
The commander wavered as if making a painful confession.
Sometimes a man in my position is forced to lie to the people he loves. Today was one of those days.
He eyed her sadly.
What I'm about to tell you, I never planned to have to say to you or to anyone.
Susan felt a chill. The commander had a deadly serious look on his face. There was obviously some aspect of his agenda to which she was not privy. Susan sat down. There was a long pause as Strathmore stared at the ceiling, gathering his thoughts.
Susan, he finally said, his voice frail. I have no family.
He returned his gaze to her.
I have no marriage to speak of. My life has been my love for this country. My life has been my work here at the NSA.
Susan listened in silence.
As you may have guessed, he continued, I planned to retire soon, but I wanted to retire with pride. I wanted to retire knowing that I'd truly made a difference.
But you have made a difference, Susan heard herself say. You built Translator.
Strathmore didn't seem to hear.
Over the past few years, our work here at the NSA has gotten harder and harder. We've faced enemies I never imagined would challenge us. I'm talking about our own citizens. The lawyers, the civil rights fanatics, the EFF. They've all played a part. But it's more than that. It's the people. They've lost faith. They've become paranoid. They suddenly see us as the enemy. People like you and me, people who truly have the nation's best interests at heart, we find ourselves having to fight for our right to serve our country. We're no longer peacekeepers. We're eavesdroppers, peeping toms, violators of people's rights. Strathmore heaved a sigh. Unfortunately, there are naive people in the world, people who can't imagine the horrors they'd face if we didn't intervene. I truly believe it's up to us to save them from their own ignorance. Susan waited for his point. The commander stared wearily at the floor and then looked up. Susan, hear me out, he said, smiling tenderly at her. You'll want to stop me, but hear me out. I've been decrypting Tankado's email for about 2 months now. As you can imagine, I was shocked when I first read his messages to North Dakota about an unbreakable algorithm called Digital Fortress. I didn't believe it was possible. But every time I intercepted a new message, Tankado sounded more and more convincing. When I read that he'd used mutation strings to write a rotating key code, I realized he was light years ahead of us. It was an approach no one here had ever tried.
Why would we? Susan asked. It barely makes sense.
Strathmore stood up and started pacing, keeping one eye on the door. A few weeks ago, when I heard about the Digital Fortress auction, I finally accepted the fact that Tankado was serious. I knew if he sold his algorithm to a Japanese software company, we were sunk. So I tried to think of any way I could stop him. I considered having him killed. But with all the publicity surrounding the algorithm and all his recent claims about Translator, we would become prime suspects. That's when it dawned on me. He turned to Susan. I realized that Digital Fortress should not be stopped. Susan stared at him, apparently lost. Strathmore went on. I suddenly saw Digital Fortress as the opportunity of a lifetime. It hit me that with a few changes, Digital Fortress could work for us instead of against us. Susan had never heard anything so absurd. Digital Fortress was an unbreakable algorithm. It would destroy them. If, Strathmore continued, if I could just make a small modification in the algorithm before it was released. He gave her a cunning glint of the eye. It took only an instant. Strathmore saw the amazement register in Susan's eyes. He excitedly explained his plan. If I could get the passkey, I could unlock our copy of Digital Fortress and insert a modification. A back door, Susan said, forgetting the commander had ever lied to her. She felt a surge of anticipation. Just like Skipjack. Strathmore nodded. Then we could replace Tankado's giveaway file on the internet with our altered version. Because Digital Fortress is a Japanese algorithm, no one will ever suspect the NSA had any part in it. All we have to do is make the switch. Susan realized the plan was beyond ingenious. It was pure Strathmore. He planned to facilitate the release of an algorithm the NSA could break. Full access, Strathmore said. Digital Fortress will become the encryption standard overnight.
Overnight? Susan said. How do you figure that? Even if Digital Fortress becomes available everywhere for free, most computer users will stick with their old algorithms for convenience. Why would they switch to Digital Fortress?
Strathmore smiled.
Simple. We have a security leak. The whole world finds out about Translator.
Susan's jaw dropped.
Quite simply, Susan, we let the truth hit the street. We tell the world that the NSA has a computer that can break every algorithm except Digital Fortress.
Susan was amazed.
So everyone jumps ship to Digital Fortress, not knowing we can break it.
Strathmore nodded.
Exactly.
There was a long silence.
I'm sorry I lied to you, Trying to rewrite Digital Fortress is a pretty big play. I didn't want you involved.
I understand, she replied slowly, still reeling from the brilliance of it all.
You're not a bad liar, Strathmore chuckled. Years of practice. Lying was the only way to keep you out of the loop.
Susan nodded. And how big a loop is it?
You're looking at it.
Susan smiled for the first time in an hour. I was afraid you'd say that.
He shrugged. Once Digital Fortress is in place, I'll brief the director.
Susan was impressed. Strathmore's plan was a global intelligence coup, the magnitude of which had never before been imagined. And he'd attempted it single-handedly. It looked like he might pull it off, too. The passkey was downstairs. Tankato was dead. Tankato's partner had been located.
Susan paused. Tankato is dead. That seemed very convenient.
She thought of all the lies that Strathmore had told her and felt a sudden chill. She looked uneasily at the commander.
Did you kill Ensai Tankato?
Strathmore looked surprised. He shook his head.
Of course not. There was no need to kill Tankato. In fact, I'd prefer he were alive. His death could cast suspicion on Digital Fortress. I wanted this switch to go as smoothly and inconspicuously as possible. The original plan was to make the switch and let Tankato sell his key.
Susan had to admit it made sense. Tankato would have no reason to suspect the algorithm on the internet was not the original. Nobody had access to it except himself and North Dakota. Unless Tankato went back and studied the programming after it was released, he'd never know about the back door. He'd slaved over Digital Fortress for long enough that he'd probably never want to see the programming again. Susan let it all soak in. She suddenly understood the commander's need for privacy in crypto. The task at hand was time-consuming and delicate. Writing a concealed back door in a complex algorithm and making an undetected internet switch. Concealment was of paramount importance. The simple suggestion that Digital Fortress was tainted could ruin the commander's plan. Only now did she fully grasp why he had decided to let Translator keep running. If Digital Fortress is going to be the NSA's new baby, Strathmore wanted to be sure it was unbreakable.
Still want out? He asked.
Susan looked up. Somehow, sitting there in the dark with the great Trevor Strathmore, her fears were swept away. Rewriting Digital Fortress was a chance to make history, a chance to do incredible good, and Strathmore could use her help. Susan forced a reluctant smile.
What's our next move?
Strathmore beamed. He reached over and put a hand on her shoulder.
Thanks.
He smiled and then got down to business.
We'll go downstairs together.
He held up his Beretta.
You'll search Hale's terminal. I'll cover you.
Susan bristled at the thought of going downstairs.
Can't we wait for David to call with Tankato's copy?
Strathmore shook his head.
The sooner we make the switch, the better. We have no guarantees that David will even find the other copy. If by some fluke the ring falls into the wrong hands over there, I'd prefer we'd already made the algorithm switch. That way, whoever ends up with the key will download our version of the algorithm.
Strathmore fingered his gun and stood.
We need to go for Hale's key.
Susan fell silent. The commander had a point. They needed Hale's passkey, and they needed it now. When Susan stood, her legs were jittery. She wished she'd hit Hale harder. She eyed Strathmore's weapon and suddenly felt queasy.
You'd actually shoot Greg Hale?
No, Strathmore frowned, striding to the door. But let's hope he doesn't know that. Chapter 76. Outside the Seville airport terminal, a taxi sat idle, the meter running. The passenger in the wire-rimmed glasses gazed through the plate-glass windows of the well-lit terminal. He knew he'd arrived in time. He could see a blonde girl. She was helping David Becker to a chair. Becker was apparently in pain. He does not yet know pain, the passenger thought. The girl pulled a small object from her pocket and held it out. Becker held it up and studied it in the light. Then he slipped it on his finger. He pulled a stack of bills from his pocket and paid the girl. They talked a few minutes longer, and then the girl hugged him. She waved, shouldered her duffel, and headed off across the concourse. At last, the man in the taxi thought. At last. Chapter 77. Strathmore stepped out of his office onto the landing with his gun leveled. Susan trailed close behind, wondering if Hale was still in Node 3. The light from Strathmore's monitor behind them threw eerie shadows of their bodies out across the grated platform. Susan inched closer to the commander. As they moved away from the door, the light faded and they were plunged into darkness. The only light on the crypto floor came from the stars above and the faint haze from behind the shattered Node 3 window. Strathmore inched forward, looking for the place where the narrow staircase began. Switching the Beretta to his left hand, he groped for the banister with his right. He figured he was probably just as bad a shot with his left, and he needed his right for support. Falling down this particular set of stairs could cripple someone for life, and Strathmore's dreams for his retirement did not involve a wheelchair. Susan, blinded by the blackness of the cryptodome, descended with a hand on Strathmore's shoulder. Even at the distance of 2 feet, she could not see the commander's outline. As she stepped onto each metal tread, she shuffled her toes forward, looking for the edge. Susan began having second thoughts about risking a visit to Node 3 to get Hale's passkey. The commander insisted Hale wouldn't have the guts to touch them, but Susan wasn't so sure. Hale was desperate. He had two options, escape crypto or go to jail. A voice kept telling Susan they should wait for David's call and use his passkey, but she knew there was no guarantee he would even find it. She wondered what was taking David so long. Susan swallowed her apprehension and kept going. Strathmore descended silently. There was no need to alert Hale they were coming. As they neared the bottom, Strathmore slowed, feeling for the final step. When he found it, the heel of his loafer clicked on hard black tile. Susan felt his shoulder tense. They'd entered the danger zone. Hale could be anywhere. In the distance, now hidden behind translator, was their destination, Node 3. Susan prayed Hale was still there, lying on the floor, whimpering in pain like the dog he was. Strathmore let go of the railing and switched the gun back to his right hand. Without a word, he moved out into the darkness. Susan held tight to his shoulder. If she lost him, the only way she'd find him again was to speak. Hale might hear them. As they moved away from the safety of the stairs, Susan recalled late-night games of tag as a kid. She'd left home base. She was in the open. She was vulnerable. Translator was the only island in the vast Black Sea. Every few steps, Strathmore stopped, gun poised, and listened. The only sound was the faint hum from below. Susan wanted to pull him back to safety, back to home base. There seemed to be faces in the dark all around her. Halfway to translator, the silence of crypto was broken. Somewhere in the darkness, seemingly right on top of them, a high-pitched beeping pierced the night. Strathmore spun, and Susan lost him. Fearful, Susan shot her arm out, groping for him. But the commander was gone. The space where his shoulder had been was now just empty air. She staggered forward into the emptiness. The beeping noise continued. It was nearby. Susan wheeled in the darkness. There was a rustle of clothing, and suddenly the beeping stopped. Susan froze. An instant later, as if from one of her worst childhood nightmares, a vision appeared. A face materialized directly in front of her. It was ghostly and green. It was the face of a demon, sharp shadows jutting upward across deformed features. She jumped back. She turned to run. But it grabbed her arm. "Don't move," it commanded. For an instant, she thought she saw Hale in those two burning eyes. But the voice was not Hale's, and the touch was too soft. It was Strathmore. He was lit from beneath by a glowing object that he'd just pulled from his pocket. Her body sagged with relief. She felt herself start breathing again. The object in Strathmore's hand had some sort of electronic LED that was giving off a greenish glow.
Damn!
Strathmore cursed under his breath.
My new pager.
He stared in disgust at the sky pager in his palm. He'd forgotten to engage the silent ring feature. Ironically, he'd gone to a local electronics store to buy the device. He'd paid cash to keep it anonymous. Nobody knew better than Strathmore how closely the NSA watched their own, and the digital messages sent and received from this pager were something Strathmore definitely needed to keep private. Susan looked around uneasily. If Hale hadn't known they were coming, he knew now. Strathmore pressed a few buttons and read the incoming message. He groaned quietly. It was more bad news from Spain. Not from David Becker, but from the other party Strathmore had sent to Seville. 3,000 miles away, a mobile surveillance van sped along the darkened Seville streets. It had been commissioned by the NSA under Umbra secrecy from a military base in Rota. The two men inside were tense. It was not the first time they'd received emergency orders from Fort Meade, but the orders didn't usually come from so high up. The agent at the wheel called over his shoulder. Any sign of our man? The eyes of his partner never left the feed from the wide-angle video monitor on the roof. No, keep driving. Chapter 78. Underneath the twisting mass of cables, Jabba was sweating. He was still on his back with a penlight clenched in his teeth. He'd gotten used to working late on weekends. The less hectic NSA hours were often the only times he could perform hardware maintenance. As he maneuvered the red-hot soldering iron through the maze of wires above him, he moved with exceptional care. Singeing any of the dangling sheaths would be disaster. Just another few inches, he thought. The job was taking far longer than he'd imagined. Just as he brought the tip of the iron against the final thread of raw solder, his cellular phone rang sharply. Jabba startled. His arm twitched, and a large gob of sizzling liquefied lead fell on his arm.
Shit!
He dropped the iron and practically swallowed his penlight.
Shit, shit, shit!
He scrubbed furiously at the drop of cooling solder. It rolled off, leaving an impressive welt. The chip he was trying to solder in place fell out and hit him in the head.
God damn it!
Jabba's phone summoned him again. He ignored it.
Midge, he cursed under his breath. Damn you, crypto's fine.
The phone rang on. Jabba went back to work, reseating the new chip. A minute later, the chip was in place, but his phone was still ringing.
For Christ's sake, Midge, give it up.
The phone rang another 15 seconds and finally stopped. Jabba breathed a sigh of relief. 60 seconds later, the intercom overhead crackled. Would the chief syssec please contact the main switchboard for a message? Jabba rolled his eyes in disbelief.
She just doesn't give up, does she?
He ignored the page. Chapter 79. Strathmore replaced his sky pager in his pocket and peered through the darkness toward Node 3. He reached for Susan's hand.
Come on.
But their fingers never touched. There was a long, guttural cry from out of the darkness. A thundering figure loomed, a Mack truck bearing down with no headlights. An instant later, there was a collision and Strathmore was skidding across the floor. It was Hale. The pager had given them away. Susan heard the Beretta fall. For a moment, she was planted in place, unsure where to run, what to do. Her instincts told her to escape, but she didn't have the elevator code. Her heart told her to help Strathmore, but how? As she spun in desperation, she expected to hear the sounds of a life-and-death struggle on the floor. But there was nothing. Everything was suddenly silent, as if Hale had hit the commander and then disappeared back into the night. Susan waited, straining her eyes into the darkness, hoping Strathmore wasn't hurt. After what seemed like an eternity, she whispered,
"Commander?"
Even as she said it, she realized her mistake. An instant later, Hale's odor welled up behind her. She turned too late. Without warning, she was twisting, gasping for air. She found herself crushed in a familiar headlock, her face against Hale's chest.
My balls are killing me,
Hale panted in her ear. Susan's knees buckled. The stars in the dome began to spin above her. Chapter 80. Hale clamped down on Susan's neck and yelled into the darkness.
Commander, I've got your sweetheart. I want out.
His demands were met with silence. Hale's grip tightened.
I'll break her neck.
A gun cocked directly behind them. Strathmore's voice was calm and even. Let her go. Susan winced in pain.
Commander?
Hale spun Susan's body toward the sound.
You shoot and you'll hit your precious Susan. You ready to take that chance?
Strathmore's voice moved closer. Let her go.
No way. You'll kill me.
I'm not going to kill anyone.
Oh yeah? Tell that to Chartreuxian.
Strathmore moved closer. Chartreuxian's dead.
No shit. You killed him. I saw it.
Give it up, Greg, Strathmore said calmly. Hale clutched at Susan and whispered in her ear.
Strathmore pushed Chartreuxian, I swear it.
She's not going to fall for your divide and conquer technique, Strathmore said, moving closer. Let her go. Hale hissed into the darkness.
Chartreuxian was just a kid, for Christ's sake. Why'd you do it? To protect your little secret?
Strathmore stayed cool.
And what little secret is that?
You know damn fucking well what secret that is. Digital fortress.
My, my, Strathmore muttered condescendingly, his voice like an iceberg. So you do know about Digital Fortress. I was starting to think you'd deny that, too.
Fuck you.
A witty defense.
You're a fool, Hale spat. For your information, translator is overheating.
Really? Strathmore chuckled. Let me guess, I should open the doors and call in the cissex?
Exactly, Hale fired back. You'd be an idiot not to.
This time, Strathmore laughed out loud.
That's your big play? Translators overheating? So open the doors and let us out?
It's true, dammit. I've been down to the sublevels. The aux power isn't pulling enough freon.
Thanks for the tip, Strathmore said. But translators got automatic shutdown. If it's overheating, Digital Fortress will quit all by itself.
Hale sneered.
You're insane. What the fuck do I care if translator blows? The damn machine should be outlawed anyway.
Strathmore sighed.
Child psychology only works on children, Greg. Let her go.
So you can shoot me?
I won't shoot you. I just want the pass key.
What pass key?
Strathmore sighed again.
The one Tancado sent you.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Liar! Susan managed. I saw Tancado's mail in your account.
Hale went rigid. He spun Susan around.
You went in my account?
And you aborted my tracer, she snapped.
Hale felt his blood pressure skyrocket. He thought he'd covered his tracks. He had no idea Susan knew what he'd done. It was no wonder she wasn't buying a word he said. Hale felt the walls start to close in. He knew he could never talk his way out of that one. Not in time. He whispered to her in desperation.
Susan, Strathmore killed Chartreuxian.
Let her go, the commander said evenly. She doesn't believe you.
Why should she? Hale fired back. You lying bastard. You've got her brainwashed. You only tell her what suits your needs. Does she know what you really plan to do with Digital Fortress?
And what's that? Strathmore taunted.
Hale knew what he was about to say would either be his ticket to freedom or his death warrant. He took a deep breath and went for broke.
You plan to write a back door in Digital Fortress.
The words met with a bewildered silence from the darkness. Hale knew he had hit a bullseye. Apparently, Strathmore's unflappable cool was being put to the test.
Who told you that?
He demanded, his voice rough around the edges.
I read it,
Hale said smugly, trying to capitalize on the change of momentum.
In one of your brainstorms.
Impossible. I never print my brainstorms,
I know. I read it directly off your account.
Strathmore seemed doubtful.
You got into my office?
No. I snooped you from Node 3.
Hale forced a self-assured chuckle. He knew he'd need all the negotiating skills he'd learned in the Marines to get out of Crypto alive.
Strathmore edged closer, the Beretta leveled in the darkness.
How do you know about my back door?
I told you. I snooped your account.
Impossible.
Hale forced a cocky sneer. One of the problems of hiring the best, Commander. Sometimes they're better than you.
Young man, Strathmore seethed, I don't know where you get your information, but you're in way over your head. You will let Ms. Fletcher go right now, or I'll call in security and have you thrown in jail for life.
You won't do it, Hale stated matter-of-factly. Calling security ruins your plans. I'll tell them everything.
Hale paused.
But let me out clean, and I'll never say a word about Digital Fortress.
No deal, Strathmore fired back. I want the passkey.
I don't have any fucking passkey.
Enough lies, Strathmore bellowed. Where is it?
Hale clamped down on Susan's neck.
Let me out or she dies.
Trevor Strathmore had done enough high-stakes bargaining in his life to know that Hale was in a very dangerous state of mind. The young cryptographer had painted himself into a corner, and a cornered opponent was always the most dangerous kind. Desperate and unpredictable. Strathmore knew his next move was a critical one. Susan's life depended on it, and so did the future of Digital Fortress. Strathmore knew the first thing he had to do was release the tension of the situation. After a long moment, he sighed reluctantly.
Okay, Greg. You win. What do you want me to do?
Silence. Hale seemed momentarily unsure how to handle the commander's cooperative tone. He let up a bit on Susan's neck.
Well, he stammered, his voice wavering suddenly. First thing you do is give me your gun. You're both coming with me.
Hostages?
Strathmore laughed coldly. Greg, you'll have to do better than that. There are about a dozen armed guards between here and the parking lot.
I'm not a fool, Hale snapped. I'm taking your elevator. Susan comes with me. You stay.
I hate to tell you this, Strathmore replied, but there's no power to the elevator.
Bullshit, Hale snapped. The lift runs on power from the main building. I've seen the schematics.
We tried it already, Susan choked, trying to help. It's dead.
You're both so full of shit, it's incredible. Hale tightened his grip. If the elevator's dead, I'll abort translator and restore power.
The elevator takes a password, Susan managed feistily.
Big deal, Hale laughed. I'm sure the commander will share. Won't you, Commander?
No chance, Strathmore hissed.
Hale boiled over. Now you listen to me, old man. Here's the deal. You let Susan and me out through your elevator. We drive a few hours, and then I let her go.
Strathmore felt the stakes rising. He'd gotten Susan into this, and he needed to get her out. His voice stayed steady as a rock.
What about my plans for Digital Fortress?
Hale laughed. You can write your back door. I won't say a word.
Then his voice turned ominous.
But the day I think you're tracking me, I go to the press with the whole story. I tell them Digital Fortress is tainted, and I sink this whole fucking organization.
Strathmore considered Hale's offer. It was clean and simple. Susan lived, and Digital Fortress got its back door. As long as Strathmore didn't chase Hale, the back door stayed a secret. Strathmore knew Hale couldn't keep his mouth shut for long. But still, the knowledge of Digital Fortress was Hale's only insurance. Maybe he'd be smart. Whatever happened, Strathmore knew Hale could be removed later if necessary.
Make up your mind, old man, Hale taunted. Are we leaving or not?
Hale's arms tightened around Susan like a vice. Strathmore knew that if he picked up the phone right now and called security, Susan would live. He'd bet his life on it. He could see the scenario clearly. The call would take Hale completely by surprise. He would panic, and in the end, faced with a small army,
Hale would be unable to act. After a brief standoff, he would give in.
But if I call security, Strathmore thought, my plan is ruined.
Hale clamped down again. Susan cried out in pain.
What's it gonna be? Hale yelled. Do I kill her?
Strathmore considered his options. If he let Hale take Susan out of crypto, there were no guarantees. Hale might drive for a while, park in the woods. He'd have a gun. Strathmore's stomach turned. There was no telling what would happen before Hale set Susan free, if he set her free.
I've got to call security, Strathmore decided. What else can I do?
He pictured Hale in court, spilling his guts about Digital Fortress.
My plan will be ruined. There must be some other way.
Decide,
Hale yelled, dragging Susan toward the staircase. Strathmore wasn't listening. If saving Susan meant his plans were ruined, then so be it. Nothing was worth losing her. Susan Fletcher was a price Trevor Strathmore refused to pay. Hale had Susan's arm twisted behind her back and her neck bent to one side.
This is your last chance, old man. Give me the gun.
Strathmore's mind continued to race, searching for another option.
There are always other options.
Finally, he spoke, quietly, almost sadly.
No, Greg. I'm sorry. I just can't let you go.
Hale choked in apparent shock.
What?
I'm calling security.
Susan gasped.
Commander, no!
Hale tightened his grip.
You call security and she dies.
Strathmore pulled the cellular off his belt and flicked it on.
Greg, you're bluffing.
You'll never do it, Hale yelled. I'll talk, I'll ruin your plan. You're only hours away from your dream. Controlling all the data in the world. No more translator, no more limits, just free information. It's a chance of a lifetime, you won't let it slip by.
Strathmore's voice was like steel.
Watch me.
But what about Susan? Hale stammered. You make that call and she dies.
Strathmore held firm.
That's a chance I'm ready to take.
Bullshit! You've got a bigger hard-on for her than you do for Digital Fortress. I know you. You won't risk it.
Susan began to make an angry rebuttal, but Strathmore beat her to it.
Young man, you don't know me. I take risks for a living. If you're looking to play hardball, let's play.
He started punching keys on his phone.
You misjudged me, son. Nobody threatens the lives of my employees and walks out.
He raised the phone and barked into the receiver.
Switchboard, get me security.
Hale began to torque Susan's neck.
I'll kill her, I swear it.
You'll do no such thing, Strathmore proclaimed. Killing Susan will just make things worse.
He broke off and rammed the phone against his mouth.
Security, this is Commander Trevor Strathmore. We've got a hostage situation in crypto. Get some men in here.
Yes, now, goddammit.
We also have a generator failure. I want power routed from all available external sources. I want all systems online in 5 minutes. Greg Hale killed one of my junior syssecs. He's holding my senior cryptographer hostage. You're cleared to use tear gas on all of us if necessary. If Mr. Hale doesn't cooperate, have snipers shoot him dead. I'll take full responsibility. Do it now.
Hale stood motionless, apparently limp in disbelief. His grip on Susan eased. Strathmore snapped his phone shut and shoved it back onto his belt.
Your move, Greg.
Chapter 81.
Becker stood bleary-eyed beside the telephone booth on the terminal concourse. Despite his burning face and a vague nausea, his spirits were soaring. It was over. Truly over. He was on his way home. The ring on his finger was the grail he'd been seeking. He held his hand up in the light and squinted at the gold band. He couldn't focus well enough to read, but the inscription didn't appear to be in English. The first symbol was either a Q, an O, or a zero. His eyes hurt too much to tell. Becker studied the first few characters.
They made no sense. This was a matter of national security?
Becker stepped into the phone booth and dialed Strathmore. Before he had finished the international prefix, he got a recording.
Todos los circuitos están ocupados, the voice said. Please hang up and try your call later.
Becker frowned and hung up. He'd forgotten. Getting an international connection from Spain was like roulette, all a matter of timing and luck. He'd have to try again in a few minutes. Becker fought to ignore the waning sting of the pepper in his eyes. Megan had told him rubbing his eyes would only make them worse. He couldn't imagine. Impatient, he tried the phone again. Still no circuits. Becker couldn't wait any longer. His eyes were on fire. He had to flush them with water. Strathmore would have to wait a minute or two. Half blind, Becker made his way toward the bathrooms. The blurry image of the cleaning cart was still in front of the men's room, so Becker turned again toward the door marked Damas. He thought he heard sounds inside. He knocked.
Hola?
Silence. Probably Megan, he thought. She had 5 hours to kill before her flight, and had said she was going to scrub her arm till it was clean. Megan? He called. He knocked again. There was no reply. Becker pushed the door open.
Hello?
He went in. The bathroom appeared empty. He shrugged and walked to the sink. The sink was still filthy, but the water was cold. Becker felt his pores tighten as he splashed the water in his eyes. The pain began to ease, and the fog gradually lifted. Becker eyed himself in the mirror. He looked like he'd been crying for days. He dried his face on the sleeve of his jacket, and then it suddenly occurred to him. In all the excitement, he'd forgotten where he was. He was at the airport. Somewhere out there on the tarmac, in one of the Seville airport's 3 private hangars, there was a Learjet 60 waiting to take him home. The pilot had stated very clearly, "I have orders to stay here until you return." It was hard to believe, Becker thought, that after all this, he had ended up right back where he'd started. "What am I waiting for?" he laughed. "I'm sure the pilot can radio a message to Strathmore." Chuckling to himself, Becker glanced in the mirror and straightened his tie. He was about to go when the reflection of something behind him caught his eye. He turned. It appeared to be one end of Megan's duffel, protruding from under a partially open stall door. "Megan," he called. There was no reply. "Megan?" Becker walked over. He rapped loudly on the side of the stall. No answer. He gently pushed the door. It swung open. Becker fought back a cry of horror. Megan was on the toilet. Her eyes rolled skyward. Dead center of her forehead, a bullet hole oozed bloody liquid down her face.
"Oh, Jesus!"
Becker cried in shock.
"Está muerta,"
a barely human voice croaked behind him.
"She's dead."
It was like a dream. Becker turned.
"Señor Becker?"
the eerie voice asked. Dazed, Becker studied the man stepping into the restroom. He looked oddly familiar.
"Soy Hulot,"
the killer said.
"I am Hulot."
The misshapen words seemed to emerge from the depths of his stomach. Hulot held out his hand.
"El anillo. The ring."
Becker stared blankly. The man reached in his pocket and produced a gun. He raised the weapon and trained it on Becker's head.
"El anillo."
In an instant of clarity, Becker felt a sensation he had never known. As if cued by some subconscious survival instinct, every muscle in his body tensed simultaneously. He flew through the air as the shot spat out. Becker crashed down on top of Megan. A bullet exploded against the wall behind him.
"Mierda!"
Hulahut seethed. Somehow, at the last possible instant, David Becker had dived out of the way. The assassin advanced. Becker pulled himself off the lifeless teenager. There were approaching footsteps, breathing, the cock of a weapon.
"Adios,"
the man whispered as he lunged like a panther, swinging his weapon into the stall. The gun went off, There was a flash of red, but it was not blood. It was something else. An object had materialized as if out of nowhere, sailing out of the stall and hitting the killer in the chest, causing his gun to fire a split second early. It was Megan's duffel. Becker exploded from the stall. He buried his shoulder in the man's chest and drove him back into the sink. There was a bone-crushing crash. A mirror shattered. The gun fell free. The two men collapsed to the floor. Becker tore himself away and dashed for the exit. Houlihan scrambled for his weapon, spun, and fired. The bullet ripped into the slamming bathroom door. The empty expanse of the airport concourse loomed before Becker like an uncrossable desert. His legs surged beneath him faster than he'd ever known they could move. As he skidded into the revolving door, a shot rang out behind him. The glass panel in front of him exploded in a shower of glass. Becker pushed his shoulder into the frame, and the door rotated forward. A moment later, he stumbled onto the pavement outside. A taxi stood waiting.
"Déjame entrar!"
Becker screamed, pounding on the locked door.
"Let me in!"
The driver refused. His fare with the wire-rim glasses had asked him to wait. Becker turned and saw Houlihan streaking across the concourse, gun in hand. Becker eyed his little Vespa on the sidewalk.
"I'm dead."
Houlihan blasted through the revolving doors just in time to see Becker trying in vain to kickstart his Vespa. Houlihan smiled and raised his weapon.
"The choke!"
Becker fumbled with the levers under the gas tank. He jumped on the starter again. It coughed and died.
"El anillo. The ring."
The voice was closed. Becker looked up. He saw the barrel of a gun. The chamber was rotating. He rammed his foot on the starter once again. Houlihan's shot just missed Becker's head as the little bike sprang to life and lurched forward. Becker hung on for his life as the motorcycle bounced down a grassy embankment and wobbled around the corner of the building onto the runway. Enraged, Houlihan raced toward his waiting taxi. Seconds later, the driver lay stunned on the curb, watching his taxi peel out in a cloud of dust. Chapter 82. As the implications of the commander's phone call to security began to settle on the dazed Greg Hale, he found himself weakened by a wave of panic.
"Security is coming."
Susan began to slip away. Hale recovered, clutching at her midsection, pulling her back.
"Let me go,"
she cried, her voice echoing through the dome. Hale's mind was in overdrive. The commander's call had taken him totally by surprise.
"Strathmore phoned security. He's sacrificing his plans for Digital Fortress."
Not in a million years had Hale imagined the commander would let Digital Fortress slip by. This back door was the chance of a lifetime. As the panic rushed in, Hale's mind seemed to play tricks on him. He saw the barrel of Strathmore's Beretta everywhere he looked. He began to spin, holding Susan close, trying to deny the commander a shot. Driven by fear, Hale dragged Susan blindly toward the stairs. In 5 minutes, the lights would come on, the doors would open, and a SWAT team would pour in.
"You're hurting me," Susan choked.
She gasped for breath as she stumbled through Hale's desperate pirouettes. Hale considered letting her go and making a mad dash for Strathmore's elevator. But it was suicide. He had no password. Besides, once outside the NSA without a hostage, Hale knew he was as good as dead. Not even his Lotus could outrun a fleet of NSA helicopters.
"Susan is the only thing that will keep Strathmore from blowing me off the road."
"Susan," Hale blurted, dragging her toward the stairs.
"Come with me. I swear I won't hurt you."
As Susan fought him, Hale realized he had new problems. Even if he somehow managed to get Strathmore's elevator open and take Susan with him, she would undoubtedly fight him all the way out of the building. Hale knew full well that Strathmore's elevator made only one stop. The underground highway, a restricted labyrinth of underground access tunnels through which NSA power brokers moved in secrecy. Hale had no intention of ending up lost in the basement corridors of the NSA with a struggling hostage. It was a death trap. Even if he got out, he realized, he had no gun. How would he get Susan across the parking lot? How would he drive? It was the voice of one of Hale's Marine Military Strategy professors that gave him his answer. Force a hand, the voice warned, and it will fight you. But convince a mind to think as you want it to think, and you have an ally.
Susan, Hale heard himself saying, Strathmore's a killer. You're in danger here.
Susan didn't seem to hear. Hale knew it was an absurd angle anyway. Strathmore would never hurt Susan, and she knew it. Hale strained his eyes into the darkness, wondering where the commander was hidden. Strathmore had fallen silent suddenly, which made Hale even more panicky. He sensed his time was up. Security would arrive at any moment. With a surge of strength, Hale wrapped his arms around Susan's waist and pulled her hard up the stairs. She hooked her heels on the first step and pulled back. It was no use. Hale overpowered her. Carefully, Hale backed up the stairs, with Susan in tow. Pushing her up might have been easier, but the landing at the top was illuminated from Strathmore's computer monitors. If Susan went first, Strathmore would have a clear shot at Hale's back. Pulling Susan behind him, Hale had a human shield between himself and the crypto floor. About a third of the way up, Hale sensed movement at the bottom of the stairs.
Strathmore's making his move. Don't try it, Commander, he hissed. You'll only get her killed.
Hale waited, but there was only silence. He listened closely. Nothing. The bottom of the stairs was still.
Was he imagining things?
It didn't matter. Strathmore would never risk a shot with Susan in the way. But as Hale backed up the stairs, dragging Susan behind him, something unexpected happened. There was a faint thud on the landing behind him. Hale stopped, adrenaline surging. Had Strathmore slipped upstairs? Instinct told him Strathmore was at the bottom of the stairs. But then suddenly, it happened again, louder this time. A distinct step on the upper landing. In terror, Hale realized his mistake.
Strathmore's on the landing behind me. He has a clear shot of my back.
In desperation, he spun Susan back to his uphill side and started retreating backwards down the steps. As he reached the bottom step, he stared wildly up at the landing and yelled,
Back off, Commander! Back off or I'll break her...
The butt of a Beretta came slicing through the air at the foot of the stairs and crashed down into Hale's skull. As Susan tore free of the slumping Hale, she wheeled in confusion. Strathmore grabbed her and reeled her in, cradling her shaking body.
Shh, he soothed. It's me. You're okay.
Susan was trembling.
Commander, she gasped, disoriented. I thought you were upstairs. I heard...
Easy now, he whispered. You heard me toss my loafers up onto the landing.
Susan found herself laughing and crying at the same time. The commander had just saved her life. Standing there in the darkness, Susan felt an overwhelming sense of relief. It was not, however, without guilt. Security was coming. She had foolishly let Hale grab her, and he had used her against Strathmore. Susan knew the commander had paid a huge price to save her.
I'm sorry, she said.
What for?
Your plans for Digital Fortress. They're ruined.
Strathmore shook his head.
Not at all.
But what about security? They'll be here any minute. We won't have time to...
Security's not coming, Susan. We've got all the time in the world.
Susan was lost.
Not coming? But you phoned.
Strathmore chuckled.
Oldest trick in the book. I faked the call.
Chapter 83. Becker's Vespa was no doubt the smallest vehicle ever to tear down the Seville runway. Its top speed, a whining 50 miles per hour, sounded more like a chainsaw than a motorcycle, and was unfortunately well below the necessary power to become airborne. In his side mirror, Becker saw the taxi swing out onto the darkened runway about 400 yards back. It immediately started gaining. Becker faced front. In the distance, the contour of the airplane hangars stood framed against the night sky, about a half mile out. Becker wondered if the taxi would overtake him in that distance. He knew Susan could do the math in 2 seconds and calculate his odds. Becker suddenly felt fear, like he had never known. He lowered his head and twisted the throttle as far as it would go. The Vespa was definitely topped out. Becker guessed the taxi behind him was doing almost 90, twice his speed. He set his sights on the 3 structures looming in the distance. The middle one. That's where the Learjet is. A shot rang out. The bullet buried itself in the runway yards behind him. Becker looked back. The assassin was hanging out the window, taking aim. Becker swerved, and his side mirror exploded in a shower of glass. He could feel the impact of the bullet all the way up the handlebars. He lay his body flat on the bike.
God help me, I'm not going to make it.
The tarmac in front of Becker's Vespa was growing brighter now. The taxi was closing, the headlights throwing ghostly shadows down the runway. A shot fired. The bullet ricocheted off the hull of the bike. Becker struggled to keep from going into a swerve.
I've got to make the hangar.
He wondered if the Learjet pilot could see them coming.
Does he have a weapon? Will he open the cabin doors in time?
But as Becker approached the lit expanse of the open hangars, he realized the question was moot. The Learjet was nowhere to be seen. He squinted through blurred vision and prayed he was hallucinating. He was not. The hangar was bare.
Oh my God, where's the plane?
As the 2 vehicles rocketed into the empty hangar, Becker desperately searched for an escape. There was none. The building's rear wall, an expansive sheet of corrugated metal, had no doors or windows. The taxi roared up beside him, and Becker looked left to see Houlihan raising his gun. Reflex took over. Becker slammed down on his brakes. He barely slowed. The hangar floor was slick with oil. The Vespa went into a headlong skid. Beside him, there was a deafening squeal as the taxi's brakes locked and the balding tires hydroplaned on the slippery surface. The car spun around in a cloud of smoke and burning rubber, only inches to the left of Becker's skidding Vespa. Now, side by side, the 2 vehicles skimmed out of control on a collision course with the rear of the hangar. Becker desperately pumped his brakes, but there was no traction. It was like driving on ice. In front of him, the metal wall loomed. It was coming fast. As the taxi spiraled wildly beside him, Becker faced the wall and braced for the impact. There was an ear-splitting crash of steel and corrugated metal, but there was no pain. Becker found himself suddenly in the open air, still on his Vespa, bouncing across a grassy field. It was as if the hangar's back wall had vanished before him. The taxi was still beside him, careening across the field. An enormous sheet of corrugated metal from the hangar's back wall billowed off the taxi's hood and sailed over Becker's head. Heart racing, Becker gunned the Vespa and took off into the night. Chapter 84. Jabba let out a contented sigh as he finished the last of his solder points. He switched off the iron, put down his penlight, and lay a moment in the darkness of the mainframe computer. He was beat. His neck hurt. Internal work was always cramped, especially for a man of his size.
And they just keep building them smaller, he mused.
As he closed his eyes for a well-deserved moment of relaxation, someone outside began pulling on his boots.
Jabba, get out here, a woman's voice yelled.
Midge found me, he groaned.
Jabba, get out here.
Reluctantly, he slithered out.
For the love of God, Midge, I told you.
But it was not Midge. Jabba looked up, surprised.
Soshi?
Soshi Kuta was a 90-pound live wire. She was Jabba's right-hand assistant, a razor-sharp, cis-sec techie from MIT. She often worked late with Jabba and was the one member of his staff who seemed unintimidated by him. She glared at him and demanded,
Why the hell didn't you answer your phone? Or my page?
Your page? Jabba repeated.
I thought it was... Never mind. There's something strange going on in the main databank.
Jabba checked his watch.
Strange?
Now he was growing concerned.
Can you be any more specific?
2 minutes later, Jabba was dashing down the hall toward the databank.
This book is continued on Disc 8.